Hello and welcome back to Trek Exploration. I'm Albie.
I'm Chris.
And I had an idea, Chris. Okay. This is one of my favorite parts of Trek Exploration. When we watch an episode of Star Trek and then we talk about it, before we talk about the episode, you explain the episode to me. You do these amazing, infamous episode recaps.
They're so famous, they're not famous anymore.
Right. They're infamous. So like, I love them. So then I had this thought. I was like, wow, what if we put all 10 episodes of Starfleet Academy together, but just, you know, the episode recaps that you do, these synopsises.
Synopsises.
What if we put all 10 together back to back? I don't know if it's going to be 40 minutes, half hour, an hour. What if we put them all back to back and then listen to the whole story of season one of Starfleet Academy?
God help you all if it's an hour.
Yes, that sounds like a plan. I'm loving it. Steve, welcome to the train wreck that is Trek Exploration.
Wasn't that going to happen inevitably, like, no matter what? He was eventually going to read the second synopsis.
This is how Albie produces.
I have my foot down. Eventually, we'll read it.
The way that Albie answers a question without answering a question is borderline genius.
I'm so utterly on my own here. Episode one, Kids These Days. We open on a far-flung Federation colony where young Caleb Mir is sitting with his mother, played by Tatiana Maslany, looking out over a desert landscape at an array of planets. She and Caleb recite the names of the celestial bodies, and the mom says that they will one day get to Earth. I'm saying the mom because I never wrote down her name and I forgot who the character is. It's not listed anywhere. Enter Captain Nala Aki, who is apparently the fleet equivalent of a JAG, somebody called Donald Belisario. Turns out the mom is on trial for her role in raiding a Federation cargo ship in which an officer was killed. Enter our big bad, Nuss Braca, played by Paul Giamatti. So Nala Aki is played by Holly Hunter, the great Holly Hunter, and Nuss Braca is played by the great Paul Giamatti. Nuss challenges Aki, saying at least he was doing something to help this woman feed her child. Aki sentences Braca to a penal colony, and because of the dead officer, the mom is sentenced to a rehabilitation colony, meaning that she and Caleb will be separated. As they drag mommy away, she warns Caleb not to trust Starfleet. The boy takes the advice to heart and quietly escapes from his holding area. Forward 12 or so years. Nala is a teacher on Bajor. She left the fleet in guilt over what happened to Caleb and has been searching for him ever since. Enter Admiral Vance. Hey, Nala, we're getting the band back together. And by the band, he means reopening Starfleet Academy in San Francisco. And he wants her to be chancellor. She balks, but he offers her solid info on Caleb. They have finally located him. We catch up with a grown Caleb. He ran afoul of authority somewhere, and he is awaiting prosecution. Nala intervenes and offers him a deal. Instead of space jail, come with me and enroll in Starfleet Academy. I will do everything I can to help you find your mom, and BT Dubs, I am so, so sorry about that. Caleb reluctantly agrees, and they take a transport to the USS Athena, which is a ship that also doubles as the Academy. It's pretty cool. En route back to Earth, we meet some instructors, including the doctor from Voyager and the Klingon Jem'Hadar cadet master, Laura Thok. We also get to know some of Caleb's classmates, including the slick Genesis Live, reluctant Klingon Jaden Krag, and the ever-douchey dude bro, Darum Raimi, and the more awkward-than-awkward holographic life form, Ceres Acclamation Mill, otherwise known as Sam. But despite his matriculation, Caleb got a Caleb, and he hacks a comms console to send a message to his mom on their private frequency. Remember those planets they memorized? Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, the signal is intercepted, and apparently freed or escaped space pirate Nuss Braca attacks the ship. He hits the Athena with a bunch of programmable matter, disabling it. He holograms onto the bridge and demands that Nala give him the warp drive. She agrees to buy some time, and good thing, because Caleb has figured out a way to disable the programmable matter, but to do it, the motley crew of cadets will have to learn to put aside their fears, doubts, and differences, and trust in themselves and one another. I don't want to wait for this, which of course they do. And Aki blows Braca's ship to smithereens. Braca escapes in an emergency life pod, Darth Vader style, twirling his mustache at Caleb until he is out of sight. Instead of going the 30 feet they would need to recapture Bracca, Nala goes back to Earth, where the Athena lands and becomes the central part of the newly reinstated Starfleet Academy campus. Caleb gets a choice for making the unauthorized transmission that brought Bracca down on them, either expulsion or conditional probation to stay on at the academy. Aki reminds him that it is his best chance to find his mom again. Caleb reluctantly agrees, but he doesn't have to like it. Can these two divorced men live together without driving each other crazy? And what of Lazarus? This time on Starfleet Academy. As the title alludes to, the Betazoids are coming. The Betazoids are coming. Starfleet Academy is abuzz about the arrival of a delegation from Betazed, including the Betazoid president, at issue whether or not Betazed will join the Federation. Ever since the burn and the failure of the Federation, Betazed has become increasingly isolationist to the point where it is now surrounded by a defensive shield. Admiral Vance feels that convincing the Betazoids to join the Federation is of paramount importance to getting the United Federation of Planets back on track. So why not hold the negotiations at Starfleet Academy? Grumpy Prez is convinced to come out of his shell. Yes, the president, the Betazoid president, is really grumpy. He's convinced to come out of his shell by a youth movement on Betazed that is clamoring for more off-world contact, and Vance believes the children are the future. Prominent in that movement are the president's two children, including his daughter Tarima Sadal. Caleb is instantly smitten with Tarima, and the feeling appears to be mutual. You figure Tarima would know, but she's not like regular Betazoids. She is so telepathic and empathic that she can be a danger to others, which is why she wears some kind of dongle bobble on her neck to suppress her abilities.
Inhibitor collar.
Inhibitor collar.
Shock collar.
Shock collar. To suppress her abilities, which sure comes in handy for the ensuing plot complications. Because while Caleb is genuinely interested in Tarima, he is equally interested in getting a map of the space behind the Betazoid shields to aid in the search of his mom. Of course, Tarima finds out about this. There is much teen angst and fatherly scowls, and the delegation decides that the talks are a bust. But just as they're about to leave, Caleb makes a last appeal to Tarima because he really likes her. She can't deny that she likes him, too. Grumpy Prez is convinced to come back to the negotiations, and Vance seals the deal by proposing that the Federation's new seat of government be not on Earth, but on Betazed. All's well that ends well, and bonus, the Betazoid space maps help Caleb get one step closer to reuniting with his mom. The end. So anyway, we open episode three with Raimi. You remember him. He's the douche. Mm-hmm. Raimi sending a letter to mom and dad about super overachieving. He's doing like one-arm push-ups and like handstand push-ups. And
that's what I do in the morning.
Real dude, bro. Me too. But he is being outdone after all that by Genesis Lythe. Physical fitness is kind of the crux of this episode. So naturally, we hit the gym with the combined classes of the Academy and the War College. Caleb and Tarima are giving each other smoldering glances across the gym. But never mind that. It's time for the Calica tryouts. Both Raimi and Lythe want to be captain of the Academy team, but the gang ribs Genesis about being an admiral's daughter, and Caleb hates being on team anything. He's a lone wolf, you know. The War College bullies start giving the Academy plebes the business. You guys suck. Enter the co-ed locker room, a la Lower Decks. We hear about Raimi's varied sexual exploits, and then the Academy gang gets transported around points in the school in their underwear, or even less. Those War College jerks, the prank war is on! Thok warns Ake that the prank war will be a dumpster fire. See what I said about Universal Cultural Translator? Dumpster fire. Come on. Just as the Oversight Committee arrives and Dean Wormer is going to be so aggravated, Ake says, hey, chill. These are kids being kids. Let them learn how to resolve their own problems. Ake gathers the troops and gives them baby Vitus reflux plants to nurture and grow. Essentially from central casting for Little Shop of Horrors. They're like these Venus flytraps.
perhaps feed me Seymour things. She says they need to learn patience and empathy to defeat their War College opponents. Genesis convinces Caleb to join the Calica tryouts and let the competition begin. Two academy teams compete against each other. The highest scored players will make the final team. Smash to the hellscape that is the Calica Field, a very realistic war simulation, complete with laser drones and transport phasers. The cadets are freaked out. After heated competition, Raimi edges Genesis out by 1 point, spooking her by invoking her Admiral Daddy issues. Another War College prank prompts Raimi to challenge the War College bullies to a secret Calica battle. Captain Ake confronts Commander Calric of the War College for helping his students in the prank war. "We need to teach them empathy and fairness," she says, "not war." Calric is like, "Yeah, nah." The rivals battle in the atrium because it's cheaper to use that set, and how can they close down the biggest public space of the academy without anybody noticing? But because show, the academy plebes are getting their asses handed to them. Until Genesis uses her own strategy to win. Raimi runs away saying, "Don't look at me!" They all get caught, get in trouble, and Captain Ake yells at them and all but pushes them back towards the Seymour plants. They finally get the hint and use the plants to prank the War College. After a heart-to-heart with Reno, Raimi confides in Genesis and asks to be part of her team. An elaborate prank montage ensues in which the Academy plebes break into the War College and infest the dorms with the Seymour plants. The Academy cadets win the war with patience and empathy. End wars by understanding your opponent and disarming them is the lesson of the week. It's also the Starfleet way, compassion and understanding, something Lazarus could have used. But what of Lazarus? This time, for the third time on Starfleet Academy, episode 3, Acid Reflux. I'm sorry, Vitus Reflux.
Yes. Everybody buckle in. The USS Athena has left San Francisco for its first official space mission. Cue the Smalsy speech by Ake comparing the Academy students to a nebula. I'm a bit put off by this, but it's quickly forgotten by the Doctor's first appearance since episode 2. He takes on the role of snarky debate teacher, which stands to reason because the Doctor got his right to exist due to the power of debate. He knows the measure of a man. Caleb is a debate savant and wipes the programmable matter floors with his peers, but Jaden gets to the podium and has a panic attack. In a post-panic rap session, Mir says that he learned the art of debate in prison as another form of combat to survive. You can see him in the yard now, pumping iron, getting all swole and making the other inmates cry with his mastery of the finer points of interstellar law. Caleb and Jaden talk about Klingon myth, and it's here that we get our first info about what happened to Kronos since the burn. Apparently, the burn destroyed the planet and the Empire foundered. The remaining Klingon diaspora is now scattered among the stars as refugees, refusing all offers of aid from Starfleet or the Federation. Ake calls Jaden to her office and tells him that a Klingon ship carrying the 8 remaining houses to a refugee camp suffered catastrophic mechanical failure. His family may have been aboard. No one is confirmed dead, but the Klingon race may be on the brink of extinction. Jaden refuses any time off or counseling. He tells her he said goodbye to his family long ago. Cue the flashbacks to Jaden's past with his family on Cryos Prime, 16 months prior. He is birdwatching in the forest with his brother Thar, who is supposed to be teaching him to hunt. But Thar knows that is not Jaden's path. Jaden remembers his brother's role in leading him to the man he would become. Indeed, Thar sees Jaden for who he is before Jaden does. Thar gives Jaden a Starfleet transmitter that is calling students to the academy. Thar says the fleet is Jaden's first best destiny. Speaking of which, all of Jaden's fellow cadets are offering him sympathy, but he is unresponsive until he forces the Doctor to make the Klingon crisis the central topic of the debate competition. This ironically puts Jaden and Caleb at odds. Jaden resents that Caleb wants to help him in arguing that the Federation should offer the Klingons asylum. Jaden is like, "Dude,
I can speak for myself. And anyway, you're wrong. The Klingons don't need asylum. They need to find their own salvation. He blasts Caleb's protest, saying he, Caleb, has no people, but just regurgitates facts about others without knowing what it really means to be a part of something greater. Speaking of which, Admiral Vance tells Ake that the Federation has found a new planet, Fon Alpha, that is very similar to Kronos. But the Klingons are still refusing aid. He prompts Ake to touch base with their old friend, the Klingon diplomat and warlord, Obel Watchok. See what you can do to find a way forward, he says. Cue another flashback. Thar gets stabbed while at an outpost trying to get a dermal regenerator for Kaden. With his dying breath, Thar tells Jaden that he is enough as he is, and to trust in himself. But Jaden's refusal to pick up a weapon puts him at odds with his father. We come back to the present with Nala and Obel meeting. They clearly have a history, romantic. But still, Obel eschews the offer of Fon Alpha, arguing that the Klingons have nothing left but their traditions. Houses will only unite over conquest. And seriously, the sexual tension between these two is palpable. Back to the flashbacks. Jaden is hunting with his dad in the woods, but he makes an appeal to go to Starfleet Academy. Pops is all like, forget Starfleet, kid. Shoot that bird. Jaden refuses. Dad shoots at the bird and misses in his rage. Shortly after, the family takes off and abandons Jaden on Kryos in apparent disgrace. Jaden is now completely freaking out, but enter Raimi for the MVP moment of the episode. Darren comes to Jaden and teaches him how to use his fear of debating to focus himself and claim his voice. And holy crap, they're turning Darren into my favorite character. How did they do that? Jaden not only debates the debate, but gets into a major fight with Caleb. Cadet Master Thok comes to Jaden afterwards for a Klingon-to-Klingon heart-to-heart. She enlightens him. When you were hunting with your pops, and he was so angry that he missed his shot, that was a ruse. He knew where your destiny lay and gave you an out to come to Starfleet while still upholding all of the tedious baggage of Klingon honor. Tedious is my editorial point. With renewed vigor, Jaden wins the debate and gives Ake a solution to the whole Fon Alpha situation. Meet the Klingons on their own terms and declare that they cannot have Fon Alpha, to which the Klingons readily declare war to conquer the planet. One fake battle later, and the Klingons claim the planet as their own. The Klingons have a new home. Obel gives Jaden a new weapon befitting a warrior and says, "Your parents are safe now. Thanks to you." Jaden has a new sense of self. He and Caleb mend fences, and the ideal of Idik wins the day, which is funny because this is not a Vulcan episode. The end for this episode of Starfleet Academy, episode 4, Vox in Excelsior. We open on a black screen with a lone voice calling out from the darkness, "Hello, are you listening? You're the only one who can understand my crazy story." And thus we begin a day in the life of Ceres Acclamation Mill, or our favorite awkward cadet, Sam, with omniscient first-person voiceover and a funky techno soundtrack. After a heaping helping of exposition about her name, her home planet Kask, and the fact that she is the only photonic cadet at the Academy, complete with dance breaks, we learn that she is Kask's future emissary to the Federation. She also needs to learn how to describe organics to her photonic creators, who have never been off their planet and know nothing about how organics exist. Given that holograms used to be servants of organics, the photonic life forms don't know if organics can be trusted, and they're counting on Sam to guide them, which she is finding to be a tall order. If only there was another photonic life form somewhere who has lived among organics for the better part of a millennium and could probably just download all his experiences to them in one shot, but that would be absurd. Instead, Sam's creators pull her out of reality at random and hold audience in the same liminal headspace where Mork used to contact Orson, demanding weekly reports. They insist that she enroll in an advanced seminar called Confronting the Unexplainable. There she learns about another emissary, the legendary Starfleet Captain Benjamin Sisko. She proclaims to course Professor Isla that she will solve the mystery of Ben Sisko. Cue the DS9 theme sting, and oh boy, here we go. Yet more exposition follows to catch all the newbies up on the entire series arc of DS9 and conjecture that Sisko still lives with the wormhole aliens protecting Bajor. Sam's first move is to crash the Bajor Club, asking, hey, anyone see a ghost? She is summarily kicked out, but Aki encourages her to keep at it. You're here to dream for your entire world. It's crucial to know who you are and what you believe in order to do this, Aki explains. We then follow Aki into the B-plot, where we learn that War College honcho Kelric is hosting a meeting with Chancellor Amal from the planet Alpharat. He's freaking out because they are brilliant military strategists who have proposed a collaboration with the War College, and he doesn't want to mess it up. He has to prepare a traditional Alpharati dinner, and Aki offers to help him. We'll get to the ensuing wacky hijinks in a bit, but first, Sam visits the virtual Sisko Museum for the most MVP moment of the episode, Sirach Lofton reprising his role as Jake Sisko. According to Jake, Ben's most enduring legacy was teaching Jake how to love and be a loving father. And let's all take a breath. Professor Isla tells Sam that she won't solve the mystery of Ben Sisko through facts alone. Sisko made choices, and his choices were based on the things he loved. And that's what made him the man he became. And are you getting this yet, Sam? It's not really about Sisko. Drama break. The Kaskians contact Sam again and give her one more week to understand humanity and be a successful emissary, or they will remove her from the Academy to live in disgrace back on Kask. So Sam does what any young adult in her position would do, heads to a cadet bar where Sisko used to hang out and gets drunk. Well, Kayla packs Sam's system, consensually, so she feels drunk. Potato, potato, it's all vodka in the end. Yeah. Meanwhile, Caleb hooks up with Tamira, Jaden sort of hooks up with Kyle, and Sam starts a bar fight with the War College bullies. B-story interlude. Aki, Kelric, Jet, and the Doctor hold a comedic practice dinner party complete with silly voices, goofy spoons, subpar flute playing, and Carmen's habanera, randomly, where ultimately Kelric gets bent out of shape because Kelric got a Kelric. He blasts Aki for abandoning Starfleet 15 years prior. This is quickly amended by a turbo lift heart-to-heart about trust or something, and all's well that ends well, but not so much for Sam. She has come to realize that being an emissary is a thankless task. Succeed or fail, the emissary never really gets to do what they want to do. They have to abandon those that they love in service of their mission. But Professor Isla comes to the rescue, pulling out a copy of Jake's unpublished novel, Anselm. You remember, the one he was writing in The Visitor when he became Tony Todd for a time. Anselm means father in Bajoran. As Sam reads, she has a virtual heart-to-heart with Jake, who manifests from the pages. He explains that Ben did have choices. He was the emissary, but he did it his way. The prophets were sometimes wrong, and the learning between them was a two-way street. Benjamin stayed true to himself, and Jake feels certain that he never really left them. Sam asks Professor Isla how she got this unpublished book anyway, and we learn that despite her Cardassian appearance, Isla is half Trill. She is Isla Dax, and she tells Sam that Benjamin would have liked her. Bolstered by the lessons Sisko has taught her, Sam faces her makers with renewed self-confidence. You're going to have to back off. I'm going to do this my way. Don't call me. I'll call you. What follows is Sam thanking Benjamin for his guidance and a long overdue thank you to Avery Brooks, complete with a Sisko voiceover. And that's where this episode leaves us behind.
Wow.
Woo!
That's nicely done.
Yeah.
So, yeah. What was that quote that Sisko said?
I wrote it down because it was beautiful. He wrote, "Divine laws are simpler than human ones, which is why it takes a lifetime to be able to understand them. Only love can understand them. Only love can interpret these words as they were meant to be interpreted." We open up, and I know this is Albie's favorite part of the entire series, with a sexy times montage between
sexy
Caleb
times
and Tarima, complete with emo soundtrack. Things get so intimate that Tarima brings Caleb into her mind to the safest place she knows. And there, Caleb sees his old pal, AI Teddy Ruxpin, and cue the traumatic flashbacks about the first scene in episode one. Caleb is miffed at the reminder, and the mood is broken. Tarima is sorry, but angry at Caleb for not accepting her for who she is.
Now to the main plot. The Athena is carrying cadets from the Academy and the War College to train in crisis response by conducting a mock rescue mission in a ship graveyard aboard the derelict USS Miyazaki, which lost its entire crew when testing out an experimental singularity drive. Half of the cadets, blue team, will go to the ship and get the computer and life support working. The other cadets, red team, will stay behind on the Athena and provide support. Blue team consists of Jaden, Sam, Caleb, Kyle, and War College cadet Bavi, the snarky Vulcan, and they are led by Lieutenant Commander Tomov, a new character that we haven't seen. That bodes well, I guess. Bavi says he was drawn to the War College thanks to Adventure Comics featuring the exploits of the Miyazaki. He called them inspiring. Caleb calls them Starfleet propaganda, designed to get poor kids like him to join up. Despite this, the kids work together as a team to accomplish the first task and reestablish life support in record time, thanks to Caleb's mechanical prowess. He is kind of a Mary Sue. Back on the bridge of the Athena, Genesis and Darum are providing support with other Red Team members when they detect weird readings. 30 unknown power sources have surrounded the Miyazaki, and intruders are boarding, putting an energy field around the Miyazaki, jamming comms and transporters. It is Reavers, Furies, claiming salvage and ransoming the away team for Latinum, threatening to eat the cadets if Aki doesn't comply. The Reavers, Furies, are human-alien hybrids that operate in the Outer Rim, disputed territories. They are ultraviolet and untrustworthy. Ake, Kelrick, and Vance put their heads together for a rescue plan. Frontal assault is out, as it would get the cadets killed. Vance has another solution. Call on our old friend, Nuss Braca. Reports say Nuss has a specialized weapon to combat the Reavers, Furies, and maybe we convince him to help us. Ake is like, You're crazy, Caleb. Vance is like the enemy of our enemy. And she's like, yeah, they're assholes. On the Miyazaki, Tomov isn't sitting idle. He makes a stand against the Furies that buys the kids time to get to the bridge, but it costs him his life. Bavi barricades the bridge in response to Caleb's disbelief at Tomov's sacrifice by quoting Spock from Wrath of Khan, and we all just had a nice fan moment, didn't we? Sam tries to work her hologram magic to reactivate the computer and put a force field around the bridge using a comic book to help them. We'll get to that later. Anyway, Nuss takes Vance up on his invitation, and Paul Giamatti returns for the role he was born to play. He smarms it up wonderfully, giving Vance his terms. Stop supplying dilithium to planet XYZ so I can monopolize trade and travel routes in that sector. While Vance goes to see if he can make the deal, Braca taunts Nala, recalling that she sacrificed her son to save her own crew during the burn. Her son died in circumstances very similar to the Miyazaki, and she could have rescued him but chose duty instead. And now the same is happening with Caleb. Back on the bridge of the Athena, Genesis and Darum get a bead on the Fury ship and propose launching a probe to pinpoint their locations. And not a moment too soon. On the Miyazaki, things look dire. Sam is having trouble getting the computer to respond, and Tarima somehow connects mentally with Caleb. She proposes to Aki that she use her heightened Betazoid powers to connect with the stranded cadets and help them. She and Occam explain that Tarima wears the regulator, the shock collar on her neck, because her mental abilities are so strong that she could damage those around her when she feels angry or hurt. That's how her father actually lost his hearing. But she feels now that she can control it and talk to Caleb. So here's the plan. Tarima will astrally project herself to the stranded cadets and give them an intermix formula to safely restart the Miyazaki singularity drive, disrupting the Fury's force field, enabling rescue. But that's actually plan B. Plan A comes from Nuss now that he has what he wants, a sonic weapon that will drive the Fury's crazier, and cause them to lose control of their ship, disrupting the force field. Thank goodness Genesis and Darum found a way to pinpoint the enemy ship. Tarima mentally connects with Caleb and gives him the skinny. Access the main engineering computer and tell Bavi to access a specific program to reboot the singularity drive. Meanwhile, another ship, the Sargasso, is warping in with the sonic weapon to target the Furies. But something doesn't sit right with Ake. This is too easy. Braca is playing them. She's sure of it. He is actually
actually working with the Furies the whole time. Back in the Miyazaki, they get the Singularity Drive working, but before the Athena can mount a rescue, the Furies break onto the bridge. Sam gets hit and is down. Tarima rips her inhibitor off and is seizing in sick bay. She's on sick bay. Remember, she's over in sick bay and she's projecting. So the doctor is standing over her all nervous. Bavi becomes the hero and takes a fatal shot to the chest to save Caleb. This sends Tarima over the edge. Yo, Caleb, tell everyone to duck. And she goes all Black Canary, using her mind powers to make a sonic wave that makes the Furies' heads explode. Braca disappears. He was playing a long game. As soon as the Sargasso left to fight the Furies, he had his pirates attack and ransack the highly classified space station it was guarding. Bavi is dead. Sam is down and short-circuiting. Tarima is in critical condition. Aki is pissed and bereft, and Braca sends a holographic message that he is sending her one more gift. And on that ominous note, we end this episode of Starfleet Academy, the mind-blowing episode 6. Come, let's away. All right, so surf's up. It's spring break. Yes, spring break is still a thing in the 32nd century. And our cadets hit the beach for some fun, sun, and a heated rivalry with the War College kids to win the Battle of the Bands and save the Sausalito Hollow Rec Center from greedy developers who want to put up a Quark's bar. Okay, now, sorry, children of the 80s. Myself included, you'll find no John Cusack, Courtney Thorne-Smith, or Curtis Armstrong here. What you will find is Caleb moping in the atrium, composing an awkward message to Tarima, and giving us a brief recap of what has happened since the harrowing events of the Miyazaki. In the month that Tarima has been recovering on Beta Zed, everyone is trying to get back to normal, and the student body is set to leave for All Worlds Day. Jaden is going to spend time with Kyle and Ibiza. Sam is up and running, but still glitching. She is heading to a special holotech rehab spa to get fixed up, and Genesis is going to join her family in Mumbai, but not so fast. Ake informs Genesis that she is recommending her for the pre-command track. Genesis is stoked. Or is she? Meanwhile, Caleb is set to go to a host family, but he's having none of it. He's mad at Aki for not getting any info about his mom from Nuss. You know, when everybody was dying and heads were exploding. How come you didn't ask about my mom? Aki agrees to let him stay at the academy and just hang. Really? Okay. Meanwhile, Darum is apparently abducted and taken through a portal to parts unknown. Jaden witnesses this and jumps into the breach after him. Turns out that Darum has been taken to the sunset moon somewhere in the Kyonian realm. It's remarkably Vulcan-like and kind of weird when you consider that Kyonians are fish people, right? I mean, they're fish people who can look like humans if they choose. Anyway, Jaden comes in hot, brandishing a huge rock and declaring that it is a good day to die. But it turns out that Darum has been abducted for a wedding ceremony, and he declares that Jaden is his cousine, or best man. Jaden has stumbled into what is essentially a Kyonian rehearsal dinner. Darum explains that the sunset moon is the ceremonial location for this party, and that it dried up when the core stopped spinning, which is a long way of explaining that you won't see any fish people who look like fish people in this episode. Turns out that Darum has an arranged marriage with his boo Kyra, but he's freaked out because the wedding was supposed to happen a few years down the line. BT dubs, Kyra is royalty. And sorry, Darum, I accelerated the wedding because my parents are abdicating early, so we have to step up and be king and queen of the enchantment under the sea dance. Darum seems really cool with this. Let's do this. I made a commitment and I love you. Jaden is set to leave to go back to Kyle, but Darum begs him to stay. Jaden says Darum is just doing this to please his parents and meet societal obligations, but he agrees to stick by Darum's side. And Darum is so obviously into Jaden. I didn't see it at first, but I'm seeing it now. He says he doesn't want to leave the academy, but he made a promise to be king. He can't just bail on his family the way Jaden did. The inevitable spat follows, but Jaden comes through in the end, delivering a heartfelt cosine toast that celebrates Darum's selflessness. Kyra is so moved by Jaden's words that she releases Darum from his obligations. She will rule as the lone fish queen. Back at the academy, Caleb is sunbathing in the atrium and is surprised by Genesis, who has also decided to stay at the last minute, supposedly to get ahead on her studying.
She convinces him to have some fun. Let's play toxic or non-toxic, which consists of sticking their hands into samples in the science lab. Gags abound. Caleb's ears grow. There's a warp slug. They chase the slug around, barely steering clear of Reno, those rapscallions. But interlaced with this romp is serious talk about why Caleb hasn't actually spoken to Tarima since the day of the ambush on the Miyazaki. He's still freaked out about the intimate moment they shared in her head. Genesis is also having doubts. Is she on the pre-command track because of her highly placed Admiral Dad? She decides they need to hack their way onto the bridge. Once there, she calls up a programmable matter computer key that will get her into every database on the ship. Caleb is all like, hey, you've just been playing me this whole day to get onto the bridge. And she's like, I have to hack into my Starfleet transcripts. I altered my letters of recommendation to get into the Academy, and when Ake submits my stuff for review for the pre-command track, the jig will be up. Reno catches them. Ake comes back. Genesis confesses. The recommendations actually pointed out that Genesis is driven mainly by fear. Ake says, we all have flaws. Use this as a learning experience or something. But you're out of the pre-command track, and what's more, you're both on double secret probation. Now hit the road. All World's Day is over and everyone is back from break. Darum and Jaden seem to forget all the growth they've just experienced, and Caleb finally sends his message to Tarima. Then they hit the beach one last time and play space volleyball as beautiful meteors rain down over San Francisco Bay. Because it's spring break, yo! Spring break on Star Trek, Starfleet Academy. This episode, episode 7. That's why I'm wearing this shirt, this ridiculous shirt, because it's spring break.
I love it.
Thank you. So, they keep getting longer and longer. That's what she said. A new day is dawning on Starfleet Academy, and the doctor is watching the sunrise and scoffing at the useless platitudes about the new possibilities it's supposed to represent. This cynical observation dovetails into exposition about the return of Tarima. She has recovered from her coma and has been transferred out of the war college into the Academy because she can't risk another trauma like the one on the Miyazaki without permanent damage. Welcome to the Academy, Cadet Sadal. Go study a moss or something equally safe. Tarima is clearly withdrawn and non-communicative, which seems to be going around. The rest of our lovable cadets cannot get it together and are failing miserably at an emergency simulation on the bridge. Apparently, the events of the Miyazaki are coming home to roost, and the kids have no idea how to deal with the enormity of it all. Enter their last, best hope against crashing and burning, our manic pixie dream Professor Lieutenant Sylvia Tilly. In an attempt to shake the kids out of their funk, Ake has mandated that they take a theater class. See also sneaky backdoor trauma therapy taught by Tilly. They're all like, what the? But Tilly says theater is statecraft and will serve you well in your fleet careers. The assignment, everyone pick a play and we'll perform one of them. Fail this, fail the semester. Sam is jazzed about this. She is jazzed about the entire concept of creativity. She tries to share this enthusiasm with Tarima and the absurdity of it in the face of everything that happened on the Miyazaki, but Tarima shuts her down. How about we don't share? Sam is still glitching like crazy, BT dubs, but she suggests the class performs Thornton Wilder's Our Town, in which she sees a distillation of the essential nature of organics. She calls it a hopeful defiance, and Tilly is sold. We're doing Our Town! As if on cue, Sam collapses. The doctor says the holotherapy didn't work, and I don't know how to fix you. There's only one possible cure. Go back to Cask and ask the makers what to do. Ake and the doctor will accompany her. This we learn about Cask on the trip over. There is extreme gravity leading to time dilation. Every 3 Earth days equals 5 years on Cask, and remember that because it comes in super relevant later. Sam once again reaches out to the doctor for mentorship and support, but he snubs her again. Speaking of snubbing, back at the play rehearsals, everyone is worried sick about Sam, but Tilly is still trying to dig into character motivation. Tarima is like, how about screw this touchy-feely I'm a victim crap and we'll just walk it off. She proceeds to call Caleb for a drunken booty call. He's like, maybe we shouldn't do this just now. Tarima accuses him of thinking she's a monster and pushes him away. Go find Genesis. Still drunk, Tarima confides in Genesis, and they have one of the best character beats of the series yet. But never mind that. We've arrived at Kask, and the makers have scanned the Doctor's memories to create a space where he and Ake will feel at ease during the visit, which I guess is how you get away with just using the atrium set again. Anyway, they scan Sam and say they can't fix her either. She is broken because of her interactions with organics, and they will not send another emissary back to the slaughter. Series acclamation mill, terminate. Racked with guilt, the Doctor confides to Sam's prone shell. The reason I've refused to mentor you is because way back in my Voyager days, I once made a holographic family. My holographic daughter Belle died as a child. You remind me so much of her that I couldn't bear to chance such a loss again. Ake and the Doctor have another powwow with the Makers. The Makers aren't really refusing to fix Sam. They really just can't. Her neural pathways are beyond their understanding. The Doctor says she's failing because you programmed her without memories, and therefore she has no resilience against all the challenges life is going to throw at her. Ake suggests they rebuild Sam and give her a childhood, a full childhood with the Doctor as her parent. He balks at first, but breaks down and agrees. This is where the time dilation comes in. Remember, we mentioned that. The Doctor can spend 17 years raising Sam in just a couple of Earth days. The cast agree, and what follows is the most adorable daddy-daughter montage you've ever seen. Sam now has two sets of memories, her new lifetime with the Doctor, and the original 209 days she spent at the Academy, which sure comes in handy, so you don't have to do a complete character reset when she returns to the gang. Did someone say Bluey? Back at the theater rehearsals, Tarima and Tilly have it out. Tarima storms off. The kids are sitting around bummed about both Tarima and Sam. So it's Occam to the rescue. He starts to read the play and forces them to do it. And even Tarima comes around. The students find all the life lessons they could possibly need from our town. And they have a new resolve to move forward, to keep going. And holy moly, what an episode of Star Trek. And maybe I'm spoiling my initial impressions, but holy moly, this episode. And I only say moly because Albie bleeps out.
I appreciate that. That way I don't have to edit it out.
Before we get too dark, so we can start this episode discussion, can you read one of your infamous episode recaps?
All right, I just have to take my shirt off first, so give me a second.
No, hey, wait. I'm all for it. I heard you were never nude.
I'll spare all of you that horror. The horror. The horror. The school year is over and it's time to party. Woo! The student is celebrating, and the Athena is en route to Beta Z to rendezvous with the rest of the fleet to dedicate the Federation's new seat of government. And getting every Federation ship together in one place seems like a really great idea. Jaden is hosting a Klingon bonding ritual designed to make his classmates a part of his family. This, of course, triggers Caleb, who is thinking of his lost mom and refuses to participate. He wanders into another awkward conversation with Tarima, where they start to mend fences, but she accuses him of always running. We interrupt this angst for some bad news. Remember that top secret space station Braca robbed back in episode 6? Vance tells Ake that Nuss now has his hands on Omega 47 particles that are super destructive. He used one to destroy normal space and subspace in Sector 953, making warp travel impossible in the region for the next million years. He now has Omega 47 mines that he can detonate remotely and cut the Federation off from warp travel forever. Commander Kellerick says, "Whoa, I guess we should delay our plans to gather the entire Federation fleet in one spot." To which Vance says, "That? Nah, we're still doing that. Get the cadets safely to Beta Z." Back with Caleb, he's pining with guilt over mom. Sam helps him crack the encryption code that she used to send him secret messages, and voila, 3 years worth of messages pop up. The most recent one, 2 days ago, and mom is in the Ukek market. Come fast, the Venari Ral are moving in and it's not safe. Caleb almost tells Ake what's happening, but he overhears that the entire fleet has been recalled
to within Federation borders until the Venari Ral threat is contained, and he mentally comments on what a sensible plan this is before deciding not to tell her after all and taking matters into his own hands. He goes to hijack a shuttle, and Sam pops in. As he's trying to dissuade her from joining him, Genesis and Darren pop in for more reasons, and he's all like, it's my burden to take the ring to Mordor and destroy it in Mount Doom, and they're all like, we're not going to let you do it alone, Frodo, and thus the Fellowship is forged. Operation Mom Rescue is go. A short ride through a transwarp conduit later, and the kids are in orbit around Ukek. They took some mechanical damage, so here's the plan. Genesis, Darum, and Sam will trade star charts for the repair parts they need, and Caleb will find Mom. You will not find a more wretched hive of scum and villainy, he says, so everyone watch your backs, remember where we parked, and meet back here in half an hour. Back on the Athena, Tarima and Jaden discover Caleb's pad with his newly found mammograms. They take it to Ake. She fills Vance in on what happened. He says, crap, Ukek is about to be annexed by the Venari Ral. Good thing I've sensibly ordered the entire fleet to stay within Federation borders. However, I know you're going after them, so this is what you do. Get all the kids off the Athena and take it to the edge of Federation territory. Let me know what scans reveal. If you jump the border, I'll have to disavow all knowledge of this mission. So Ake, the Doctor, and Reno take off in pursuit, and while on the edge of Federation space, they discover a seemingly randomly placed Omega 47 mine. They also discover that Jaden and Tarima have stowed away on the rescue mission. Knowing that the kids are on Ukek, Ake orders the Athena to go to maximum warp, out of Federation space, impossible mission accepted. Back on Ukek, Caleb finds Mom, cue the tearful reunion. She meets the gang and is understandably suspicious of them. Caleb understandably hides the fact that they are all Starfleet, but the Venari Ral are about to descend on the planet, so Anisha, that's Mom, played by Tatiana Maslany, back from episode one. Anisha goes to find transit off-world for her and Caleb. This is when the gang realizes that Caleb isn't coming back with them. Caleb says a bunch of hateful personal stuff to drive them away, as cruel as an orc arrow in Boromir's guts, and we all weep at the breaking of the Fellowship, but not so fast because it's time for the third act turn. Sam, Genesis, and Darum are waylaid by a Venari Ral patrol and accused of being Federation spies. Caleb is escaping with Anisha and says he can't leave them to die. See, Mom, I'm Federation too. And he runs to the rescue. Genesis, Darum, and Sam are tied up and being interrogated. Anisha swoops in, giving them a cover story, but Ake hails them just at the wrong time, her voice coming over their poorly concealed comm badges. Caleb takes the initiative to tell Ake where they are in a sneaky code. The inevitable firefight ensues. Anisha is hit. The Venari Ral are closing in, but not so fast. Ake takes the Athena down right above the marketplace and beams the gang aboard. The Athena warps away, but the Venari Ral are in pursuit. They knock the Athena out of warp and scoop her up in tractor beams. Ake orders that they cut the saucer and leave the atrium and the rest of the ship behind. They engage reserve nacelles and warp away once again. Just then, Rito detects more Omega mines and they're surrounding Federation territory. Braca's evil plot is revealed. He maneuvered the fleet into a defensive position, driving them all into one place so he could put a wall around the entire Federation, and who could have seen that coming? The Athena is now the only ship not trapped. Ake orders them to hide in a nearby nebula, and as Reno sends out plaintive maydays, Nala goes to sickbay. Cuckoo-ca-choo, Ms. Meir. We meet again. To be continued next time on Starfleet Academy. This was the penultimate episode of the first season of Starfleet Academy.
Star Trek episode recaps for this episode of Star Trek Starfleet Academy Season 1, Episode 10, Rubicon?
Rubicon now, yeah. I thought it was Rubicon, but it's right. Rubicon. So
I don't hear the difference. It's the same thing
to me. Let's get happy. Anisha locks eyes on Nala, and we flash back to where it all began. Braca's arrest, Anisha's trial, Ake's verdict that separated Caleb from his mom. With a scream of rage, Anisha launches herself at Ake, and it's a good thing Caleb is there to hold her back. We interrupt this melodrama so Reno can announce that she punched a comms link through to Vance and Thok. They all go to the bridge and find out that the Federation is well and truly screwed. The Omega 47 minefield has trapped every fleet ship besides the Athena. If the mines detonate, they will destroy 80,000 cubic light years of space and kill billions. And the Discovery can't use the mycelial network to escape because reasons. And now that we've hand-waved our infinite improbability drive away, here's where we stand. Braca seems to be trying to organize a mutual protection pact with non-aligned worlds. The mind seems to be controlled by a single subspace signal. Ake says, let's find the signal and jam it. Anisha says that Braca ain't dumb. There has to be a failsafe that makes everything go boom if the signal is disrupted. So Ake has her marching orders. Locate the source of the signal and take control of it without disrupting it. But wait, here comes the Venari Ral. Ake orders the cadets below decks to hide. Anisha stays on the bridge. A suitable amount of pew-pew-pews later, and Braca beams right into the captain's chair. He clocks Anisha with Ake and wonders how his two least favorite people are outside the mind barrier, but this is extremely helpful for both his plot and the plot of the episode, he says, and he whisks them away, but not before Ake can give a cryptic message to the doctor, who zaps himself into the main computer. Cut to the exterior of the Athena as Braca's armada proceeds to blow it out of the sky. But not so fast. The doctor did some whamma-jamma, and the explosion was just a holographic illusion. And how does that work? But then I guess the Romulans were doing essentially the same thing in the fourth season of Enterprise, so I'll give it a pass. Now, it's just the cadets and Reno on the ship and the recovered doctor who is spouting nonsense. Sam and Jaden take him to sickbay. Reno tells the others to find the source of the signal as Ake ordered. Caleb is tasked with creating a program to co-opt it and shut it down. On to the main event. Nala and Anisha are prisoners of the commandeered Athena, and boy, they just keep on finding ways to use that atrium set, huh? Where Noose starts a show trial of the Federation that he broadcasts to the entire quadrant. He begins with a heaping helping of backstory about his crummy childhood in a poor strontium mining colony, playing tic-tac-toe in the dirt. See, that's why he has that dance. As Federation supply shuttles flew overhead, ignoring them. So his dad tried to shoot one down. The Federation responded by strafing the colony with missiles, turning the skies red with death. And remember red and strontium. It's important. Braca says, let justice be served and let Anisha be the one who decides the Federation's guilt. Ake starts her defense. First, the Federation has never opened fire on civilians. Also, the Omega 47 was to develop a new source of virtually unlimited power, not a weapon. What follows is a tete-a-tete of Braca bringing up arguments to make Ake and the Federation look bad, including her decision to separate Anisha and Caleb. Anisha gets called to question Nala, and she vents 12 years of bitter recriminations against Ake and the Federation. Back on the Athena saucer, there is much bickering and angst and self-doubt amongst the cadets, but Reno rallies them all to be the best people they can be, despite the odds. Also, the doctor is still spouting gibberish. Sam, Jaden, and Genesis find out that he's telling them not to cross the Rubicon and find the glue on your shoe, and just like Adam West Batman solving one of the Riddler's ridiculous riddles by making outrageously implausible leaps of logic, Sam realizes that the doctor is talking about Rubin particles. Starfleet used Rubin particles to make Omega 47 easier to stabilize and added gluons, glue on your shoe, to increase the molecular bonds. The doctor is telling us how to stabilize Omega 47 permanently, and this is a lot of technobabble for an episode synopsis. I know I'm getting to the weeds, but how the heck does Sam know the inner workings of a top secret Omega 47 program? Anywho, they find a way to stabilize the mines. Tarima just has to find Braca's signal. Caleb has to hijack it without disrupting it, and Sam has to develop and transmit an algorithm along the signal to stabilize the mines and bring down the wall. Easy peasy. Also, Caleb and Zadi Mel with Tarima so she can use his feelings to pinpoint where his mother is, and they can sneak attack Braca's show trial. Off comes the inhibitor, and Tarima pulls a Nemesis Troy, finding the mom coordinates with the power of love. Back at the trial, Ake appeals to Anisha by telling her about the Federation lieutenant who got killed during the shuttle raid, saying the officer had, and I you not, she actually said this, he had a week to retirement. Anisha is inclined to consideration. Guilty. Rocket is about to pronounce sentence, but not so fast. Caleb swoops in on a shuttle demanding asylum. He appeals to his mom about how great Starfleet has been for him. Ake uses this as a teachable moment. She asks Caleb what color strontium is when it burns. Caleb says red. And Federation fire is only blue or green, not red. It wasn't the feds who blew up Noose's colony. The makeshift strontium weapon his dad created to shoot the shuttle down ignited the atmosphere, destroying the colony. She calls Noose an angry child with his finger on the trigger, whose entire worldview is based on a lie. Braca's followers desert him, and he throws a hissy fit, triggering the detonator. But it doesn't work, because the cadets have teched the tech and disarmed the mines. The fleet warps in to the rescue, and Braca is arrested, but not before Anisha and Ake punch him in the face. Back on a restored Athena, Caleb reconnects with Mom. The cadets bond over their shared experience, and Don't You Forget About Me by Simple Minds wells up as they all fly into a bright, bright future. That's it for this season of Starfleet Academy. It is the season finale. Rubicon, not Rubicon, like Albie was saying. Rubicon. All right, that was a long, long, long synopsis.
I still want a sandwich.
And yeah, we need a sandwich after all that. You thought the show was long before, but
Chris, oh my goodness, amazing job. You wrote all that yourself.
I mean, I did. It just seems like a whole lot of me. Like, should I keep talking now? I think everybody's probably sick of hearing me.
You're my favorite part. You're my favorite part. You could read the phone book and I'd be enamored.
I wonder if that would serve as, like, they could put that on the Blu-ray if they ever do Blu-rays anymore.
Hey, it's just like we'll sign the paper. You can have it.
Like a season long recap that you can just throw on. I don't know. Like, in what circumstance would that be useful to anybody?
Well, what I thought would be, like, if you could pitch a TV series like that, you know, and just here's all the episodes and here's the story. Boom. I don't know.
Well, there we go. See, look, now you're making it more like a public service for the people who haven't watched Starfleet Academy and don't think they want to watch Starfleet Academy, but they want to be hep to the jive that is Starfleet Academy.
Now they're hep
to my jive. So
let us know if you enjoyed all these episode recaps, episode synopsis put together back to back to back to back, all 10 of them. Let us know what you think. Was it fun going down memory lane? Or is this the first time you're hearing of Starfleet Academy and you're like, that sounds like a cool story. I got to watch that.
And if you like those recaps, there are other episodes of other Star Trek series that we do here on Trexploration, which I also recap in the course of the episode review. So check those out as well. Maybe we can just make a whole new channel that's just my recaps.
Just your recaps.
Trexploration.
Playing 24/7 live.
Trexploration cap. Re-Trexploration caps.
Trexploration is a podcast. Yeah.
We'll work.
Yeah. It needs some more work, but I think we're on to something.
I don't think we are.
I think we're on to something. Subscribe so you can get our episode recap of Operation Annihilate. All right. Thank you so much for Chris. That's a lot of work. Thank you so much for that.
I can't really wait to see like how these things are airing. So like people see us with full beards, and then once they'll see us like clean shaven, then we'll come back with mustaches.
These are continuity errors like crazy, aren't they? Who knows when
there's a script supervisor somewhere crying.
You know, you click on it. So what's the episode of this? What's the title of this video, Chris?
The title of this video is Recaps. Nothing but recaps.
All right.
Chris Caps. Come on.
Season we're one. Starfleet Academy season one. Full recap. Or how about
total recap.
Explained. Like, that's pretty popular. Should we explain the ending? It's pretty good.
Explain the ending of what?
No, that's like a thumbnail technique. You put ending explained.
Oh, wow. God. See,
so
now
you can understand the ending.
I don't understand the clickbait. The clip you are just, you're always
it's
thinking.
It's cool, Caleb. It's cool, Caleb.
Caleb, it's cool. We'll call this the SFACAP. That's probably some kind of future organization for human
maybe
rights.
Either that or we just got on a government watch list. I don't know. But thanks for joining us for this season one of Starfleet Academy. All the episode recaps back to back to back. Let us know if you like it. Let us know what you thought. Subscribe. Ring the bell.
Please.
Get notifications. We're coming back with Operation Annihilate.
If you want me to write recaps for your podcast,
he's available, folks. He's a professional author of my favorite book, and I'm Serenity's father, former cook. All right. All right. We'll see you next time.
Trexploration is a podcast, yeah. Chris and Albie and sometimes John, talking Trek all night and day, making no sense along the way. Published author of the Seeker book, father of Serenity, former cook. The beautiful John Irons is our friend. When we get together, it never ends. Original series and next gen. Captain Archer is our friend. Albie loves Voyager in DS9. Archer is our friend. Chris watches Enterprise all the time. Archer is our friend. New episodes, they come and go. All Star Trek is our favorite show. We get guests we can't afford. If you are new, then welcome aboard. It's Albie's only job, so donate well. Like and subscribe and ring that bell. Original series and next gen. Captain Archer is our friend. Albie loves Voyager in DS9. Come and go. All Star Trek is our favorite show.
We get guests we can't afford.
If you are new, then we're